You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hi, this is Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. I'm here today, well, with two of my favorite people, one of whom I know very well and one of whom I know only as a reader, but I'm happy to have both of them. It's Iona Opie and Maurice Sendak. Together, they have worked on I Saw Esau. I Saw Esau was the first book that Iona Opie collected with her husband, Peter. They are the preeminent historians, folklorists of children's games and literature and expression. Maurice Sendak is the great illustrator. This is a book of children's street rhymes, so it's, what would you say, a kind of scattier thing than you expect from either Iona or Maurice. These are the rhymes that are the creepy, crawly ones that people use on the in the schoolyard when no one's looking, are, as Iona says in her introduction, the rhymes you did not hear at your grandmother's knee. Can you tell about how you started to collect these?
Right. By accident, as everything in life seems to happen by accident. We were supposed to be assembling and very seriously studying the histories of nursery rhymes. And we used a lot of letters to the paper and correspondence who arrived. People sent us in rhymes, and some of these rhymes were obviously not the sort of thing that Granny would like to soothe the smallest child with, but they were much more rumbustious, tough and rough, and some of them quite rude. And so we set them aside, and when we got thoroughly bored with doing our serious work, we thought we'd have a holiday, and we'd do this small collection of school rhymes just as a kind of instigation of something to make people send us in more, apart from anything else. It was a sprat to catch a whale.
You know, this was this book was out of print for many, many years, and I think, if I remember correctly, that its original edition was just a pamphlet, and then the people at Candlewick Press decided to do a new edition, and they invited Maurice Sendak to illustrate it, which was a process that I was in on and hear about periodically over the telephone. This thrills me. I may have a swelled head about this. But Maurice, you described this as being one of your favorite projects. Can you tell about your experience of putting it together?
But I should go back for a second and clear up something you said, because when it was published in 1947, it was much more than a pamphlet. It was a proper bound, beautiful little book. Really very gorgeous, very simple. And I tried very hard to keep to the original format. I had to change it somewhat because I wanted to draw pictures, and the original had no pictures, no room for pictures. But it's yummy, yummy little book with wartime yellowing paper. And I have a copy that belonged to Peter Opie in my possession, which I treasure. So when I saw it, my whole aim was to do the same, not stray too far from the original edition, and be faithful to the original Opie edition. And I forget the rest of your question.
The process of putting it together as a book.
Okay, that was sort of easy, because once I began working with Iona, I knew this was going to be a very special collaboration. And those are very unique experiences, because there are very few people in literature or anywhere who know how to collaborate, really know how to collaborate, and trust the people they're working with to take it away and do something and feel safe. And Iona would periodically write to me letters I treasure about what she was seeing happening in the book. And it was like spontaneous combustion. I worked with one of the great designers in the world, Amelia Edwards. This book also was not published in America first, but in England by Walker Books, Sebastian Walker. And then he opened his branch here in America, which is Candlewick. So it was originally published in England. And Amelia spent a lot of time in Connecticut with me designing, and she left me with a rough, crude dummy, which I then pedantically would have done on proper watercolor paper neatly, but I didn't. I just fell into the little rough dummy and drew pictures all over the place. And I called and I said, Amelia, it started. And she said, not on that paper, Maurice, because it's so bad, couldn't print it. But it sort of smelled like the original Opie book, the paper, and I'm a big paper smeller. So I knew that was a good sign. And so I've never done it before. I just did a lot of original drawings. I only redid two in the whole thing, which is an amazing thing for me, that I left it so free and easy, and I spent the year just galloping through the dummy, filling it up with pictures.
Well, one of the things I love about the completed book, I Saw Esau, as published by the Candlewick Press, is that although it has the feel of a formal book, you know, small, carryable, it also feels as if the pictures have been scrawled in it. You know,
there's
the feeling of, you know, the way you would find books in school that someone had gotten to already and drawn mustaches on the models and sort of mocked up. There's the feeling that this book, that the collaboration has is very much in the spirit of the rhymes themselves. What were you hoping for when you first saw Iona, the finished mock-up of the book? Were you thrilled?
I'm not a great hoper. I never live beyond the present day. But I remember the second time I met Maurice. Was it the third time? Maybe. It was in a New York restaurant. And he suddenly started promising. It was a promise. Promising me that he would make his drawings wriggle through the rhymes and spill over onto the next page so that you always feel that you're going to turn over and find something that has continued from the previous page. But I think we got on so well because we both have the same feeling about childhood. And it's not other people's childhood. It's our own childhood. It's our memory of what it was like to be a child. And you're very small and your life is organized for you, and you're led around by the hand, sometimes to good places and sometimes to bad. But there's nothing you can do about it. And so in the back of your head, if you've got some of these rhymes, you've got a kind of weapon, ready-made weapon. They're all traditional. No child is going to make up a rhyme on the spur of the moment, but these are weapons that are at hand.
I'm going to read one of the, I suppose, unillustratable rhymes from I Saw Esau, and then talk about the principle of leaving things to the imagination, I guess. This is number 4. I guess it must be one of the most popular ones, because when you open the book, as I did as soon as I got it in the mail, I came to 4 and I said, oh boy, I have to go through the whole bunch of them. This is 4. Quick, quick, the cat's been sick. Where, under the chair. Hasten, hasten, fetch the basin. Alack, alack, it is too late. The carpet's in an awful state. No, no, it's all in vain, for she has licked it up again. This made me very happy. And knowing the Maurice Sendak principle of what not to illustrate, I wasn't surprised that there wasn't a picture accompanying it.
That picture springs to everybody's mind, so they don't need me. That's where you leave it alone. That's where you leave it alone.
The feeling, you know, many of the notes in the back of the book talk about the authors or the collector's correspondence remembering themselves being teased with some of the rhymes. I think Peter in particular was chided with a particular Peter rhyme. And the feeling I have in this book about your illustrations, Maurice, is that you're teasing some of your earlier history. There seems to be Sendak making fun of himself here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's making fun of myself. It's definitely deciding not to take myself seriously and feeling free to go back to early styles, which at one time I thought were inferior. And I had worked so hard to be a proper good drawer. And then I accomplished that to the very best of my ability. And it was such a terrific unburdening to stop being a good drawer and go back to what I'd always been, which is a spontaneous combustion drawer. Big hands, big feet, big ears, all look like immigrant kids just off the boat from Eastern Europe. And that's what it was. It wasn't teasing so much as relief to be back where I always was meant to be. drawing naturally and spontaneously and not worrying about proportions and correct things.
Yes, it's such a relief for me, too, at my age, when the troubles of the world seem to be falling on top of me the whole time. I think you feel this more as you grow older. The newspapers are so full of doom and gloom, and one's own life seems to be running out of steam a bit. And then suddenly along came these dancing, whirling people, and each one of them says, "It doesn't matter a bit. Don't worry. It doesn't. Nothing matters, because no matter how awful a time they've had, and they go out in the garden and they're eating worms because nobody loves me, everybody hates me." And this boy goes out there and he does eat the worms and he feels terribly sick, and then he recovers. He decides to make fun out of this whole thing instead, joins up the worms into a kind of skipping garland and hops off the page and makes me feel better all the time.
Oh, well, they become a valentine, if I
remember. It's a valentine skip rope.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's, I think it was a sign of health for you and me, Iona.
It was.
And, yeah, and that I could stop taking myself so seriously and coming to where you are, in that it's better finally to laugh than sort of grip the table and wait for the bomb to go off. I can't. It's too tiring.
What else can you do?
Yes, and this book was such an immense relief because these kids are so brave and so heroic, and if they can laugh, good gracious, so could we. And you'd gotten there before I did. And this was a spiritual journey for me. It sounds very grandiose, but that is precisely what it was, actually. Coming out at the other end feeling healthier and happier and clearer about my work and my place in the world. That's
good.
What Esau
good.
Is. That's
good.
What Esau is.
Who could have foreseen?
Who could have?
It's all such
except, a... Except I feel so good about it that I feel we deserve it. And God knows I've never felt that good. Not about me, anyway.
The kind of key signature of the book is set by an infant in a... white pair of baby clothes. He's crawling throughout the book. Iona describes him in her introduction as slug-like. But the first thing we see him doing, he's sitting on his platter and he's throwing something brown. We'll say no more. A friend of mine looked at it and said, "The baby is throwing a potato." And I said, "No, the baby isn't throwing a potato.
Hey,
the baby
if
is
he
doing...
wants a baby throwing a potato, that's okay. Don't take it away from him." Baby's throwing whatever you think is throwing.
Tell me, Iona, do you still go to the schoolyards to keep check of the progress of the rhymes?
I do if I feel really low. I go down to the playground and just see how they create fun out of absolutely nothing. Whatever happens, they make fun of it, or they make fun of themselves. I'm not really collecting anything seriously at the moment, because I went down every week for 14 years. And actually... I've got a book coming out next spring called The People in the Playground, which is an editing of eight, you call them semesters, I think, terms of junior school life. And it's just a funny thing happened in the playground today, that kind of thing. But they're really so full of life. I mean, this is probably, some people would say, the trouble with children. They tire you out because they've got twice as much life as adults. But when you're needing a tonic, just go in the playground and life becomes fun again.
Well, I'm so happy because, you know, Jonathan Cott, in his interview with you that was reprinted in Pipers at the Gates of Dawn, quotes from some of those notebooks, if I remember correctly, and they seem to me so beautifully written, sort of like Dorothy Wordsworth's Grasmere journals, only these about children. Things, you know, they seem, Dorothy writes about weeds she finds growing, you write about sprats in the yard, and, you know, the writing seems to me to be so lively and so fresh, and
that's
so the opportunity
kind of
to read
a
lot of them.
You make me feel better. But, you see, in fact, I feel that it's nothing to do with me, because all I'm doing is writing down what the children are saying and what they're doing, and I'm just like a mirror. And in fact, I feel rather the same about this book, because that I saw Esau book, because the rhymes belong to the children. All Peter and I did was to be interested. So the rhymes belong to the children, The drawings are Maurice's extension of them. The beautiful makeup of the book, the beautiful paper, the beautiful binding, this ravishing object that they've made of it is entirely due to the, no, perhaps not entirely due, because Maurice, I know, did it with Amelia, but it is their creation. So where am I just being very appreciative?
Tell me, I have to ask you something. You know, ever since I read that interview, it describes the house you lived in your children's collections, which included books and toys and things of that sort. And I read that the Bodleian Library had bought those all up. Now, does that mean you have to give up your toys? I recoil with horror.
No, there are two things. One is that the toys didn't go with the books.
Oh.
So I still have my playroom, which is an upstairs billiards room, which has been sliced in half. And the toys are in the bottom half, and the upper part is pompously called the archive room, but it's really full of everything else to do with childhood, christening robes and bubblegum wrappers and feeding bottles and anything that seemed appropriate, and quite a lot of things that were not appropriate. But we were all collectors by birth, really, accumulators. So I've still got that, and it's a place I wouldn't, unless I'm absolutely knocked up and incapacitated, I would never like to leave. Because wherever you go, there's something to be opened, to find. I'm still making discoveries in my own house.
Well, it's funny, because when I reread the interview, I had read it when it first appeared in The New Yorker. When I reread it, I realized that your house had become a site for one of my persistent dreams, that room with the toys, you know, had entered my imagination, and that at night, sometimes when I'm sleeping, if I'm in particular need of soccer, I go there, you know.
And so it's, I never realized you were there. I shall say hello to you when I go in.
Yes, we're just very fey here today, but it really is true. I've been thinking about
It's funny you should say that, because when I'm having a hard time falling to sleep, you know, like an anxiety attack or what I should be doing, all of that, I force myself into a toy zone too. And it usually is a Mickey Mouse store that is hidden behind a facade, and the facade falls down, and there it is, a pristine 1930s Mickey Mouse store, dry goods, where you go in and buy mint toys and mint cardboard boxes, and I have my pick, and it puts me to sleep.
Yes.
It's a superb tranquilizer. It's like, it's infantile, obviously, but it absolutely works.
But that's just what toys are for. They're another world. And because I couldn't, I still can't really bear Peter's death, because it's like having like one of your limbs torn away from you. So his room, which was always so, so somber and such a workroom, I've turned into a fantasy room. Mm-hmm. So there are all sorts of strange creatures and people living over it, teddy bears and snakes crawling all over the place, really, really happy snakes, and a thing, it's called a surprise bird. And you press a button, and this very, very flimsy bird suddenly turns round and opens its beak at you. And this has got a sort of vague lesson which I couldn't possibly describe, but it's something about, like Esau, shouting back.
Mm. I'm talking to Maurice Sendak and Iona Opie. Together they've put together a school child's pocketbook called I Saw Esau, which is a collection of children's street rhymes published by the Candlewick Press here in America. I wondered, will one of you recite I Saw Esau? Iona.
Two versions, you know.
Oh, please, both.
Oh, dear, but well, you see, the great thing about Opies is that they were born without memories. It was one of our big spiels, but I think it goes something like, I saw Esau kissing Kate. Fact is, we all three saw. For I saw him, and he saw me, and she saw, I saw Esau.
It's great.
The variants are still around, aren't they? Is that one that still lives in the playgrounds?
Yes. Variation is the essence of traditional rhyme. If you look at Lewis Carroll, you'll find his version of Humpty Dumpty is quite different from the one most people know. So you go down to the playground, you find these games which are new to the five-year-old. Somebody comes rushing up and says, "Please listen, I've got a new game," and you write it down solemnly because this is what they like. They like the attention. They like the importance of having something written down. And you forbear to tell this kid that the earliest record of that game is 1830. So they go on and they keep their shape, but they have these little variations creeping in all the time.
I noticed when I was looking through the illustrations again, because I have the lucky opportunity in this particular case to have been living with I Saw Esau since it came in the mail, and now it's several months down the line and in preparation for Christmas that brings Iona and Maurice to us. I've been noticing that the book's illustrations practically celebrate all the things that happen to children in the absence of other forms of inebriation. So it's as if the street rhymes, the children in the front cover are tipsy. They're absolutely tipsy. And the child on the back is dancing as if in a, you know, in a possessed state. And what I love about these children is that you get the idea that the wit in these rhymes is what has propelled their in sobriety.
I thought I'd discovered that myself, you know. I thought I'd discovered this inebriation with words in the playground, because they reel around, especially the boys. They get so intoxicated with their funny rhymes and their funny stories that they can't keep upright.
Well, you used to watch the kids in the neighborhood, didn't you? I remember reading in your biography that Rosie and her confreres were people you grew up with. People you looked down on having grown up yourself.
Yeah, but I didn't look down on, except from a window.
From a window is yeah. what I meant. Yeah.
And they, too, were drunk. They were drunk. And even in their physical movements, you know, the way they throw their arms around and the way they swing their bodies, and the way they make up what I call a movie music soundtrack to every game. You know, there's always music to their games.
What I love, you talked, I think, in one of the essays in Caldecott and Company, you describe the faces on the Mother Goose figures in some of Caldecott's illustrations. And, you know, to look at the illustrations here, I want to find a better word than illustrations, because they are some illustrations and seem formal, some are scrawling, some are cartoons, some are jottings, and I love this feeling of different stages of preparation or different stages of response. But it does seem like a physiognomical dictionary of childhood. And I wonder, do you keep a kind of gazetteer of expressions that you find?
No. I guess I've been doing it for so long, I can really imagine what they look like. I can really see what they look like. It's like a little camera in my head and a projection camera. And I can see what the kids look like. I also know I'm making the faces as I'm drawing. I'm making the faces. I can't see my own face, thank goodness. But I can feel the expression that is on my face. I just know what they look like. I absolutely know what they look like.
Some of these here are quite, in content, gruesome. We have fleas taking the pillows away, and creatures come back from the dead to frighten. Mm-hmm. The dead are usually gray, although Satan's fires are beautiful. What do you call this red? This pale red-orange.
That is what's called on the tempera bottle blazing red. And you can buy it. That's how magical that is.
Uh-huh. Hey, well, it's funny because the adults who are the epithet hurlers and sticks and stones can break my bones are the same gray as the returnees from the dead. Mm-hmm. This is a world in which, you know, adulthood and death are sort of cognate.
Mm-hmm.
Say something.
Well, I don't know what to say. You just said it, Michael. Give me something to say.
Well, I just wondered, you know, I guess, you know, some of the things that I love are ones that you've drawn to music. And there is a page here in which a baby eats its mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I want to know about the immediacy of response. I mean, it seems to me that the illustrations in this book have the joy of rhymes that you think you're making up for the first time when you say them to someone else, and they're formal at the same time because they seem based on other things that you've done. A pseudo-Mickey makes an appearance in one of the bathtub rhymes. You know, he falls down the drain, as children do in these rhymes. I'm just so thrilled by the...
Well, do you know what some of this comes from? And we may have talked about this before, but I have spent all my life, working life, when I'm not illustrating, just drawing pictures to music. So I will put a Mozart sonata on, or a Schubert sonata, or a Haydn quartet, or whatever. And it's an exercise to start at the beginning of the movement and do a complete drawing, a complete story, moving pictures to the end of the first movement, and then a whole story to the end of the second movement, and so on. And that what you, the exercise is that you come up with a coherent story based on the impulse of the music. Sometimes it's bad and you throw it away, but a lot of times it's very good, and it's like muscle exercise for the brain. So that's what Esau is. I always had a very private conceit, since I always wanted to be a leader writer. I always wanted to be Schubert. I had no such aspirations to be Mozart. But I always envied the process of a composer writing music to poetry and how you set it, how you set it. Those are magic words to me. So when these verses, these Opie verses are there, I'm playing a game of setting them to pictures as someone else might set them to music. So there has to be enormous variation, and there has to be enormous growing out of the words, because you don't want to be repetitive. That's being a bad songwriter. So in effect, styles change, looks change, tempo change. Everything changes from one page to the other because they're all different songs. This is a songbook, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I now realize that, you know, sometimes it takes a half an hour to come up with a single word. Improvisations, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been talking to Iona Opie and Maurice Sendak. They're here in Los Angeles to talk about I Saw Esau, and I'm thrilled to meet you, Iona. Thank you for coming, and it's a pleasure to see you again, Maurice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today is Scott Fritz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of ice and snow in books.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages. Back to days of old when knights were bold and books.
Books, 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 books.
Too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse pop time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.